and welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Today I'm chatting with Brooke White. You may know Brooke from American Idol or her Girls with Glasses YouTube channel. She is such a talented musician, but she is also an extraordinary mom, and that's what we're going to talk about today. She's going to be extremely vulnerable and sharing her road with infertility. She's going to talk about how becoming a mom for the very first time to her daughter changed her whole life. At the time we recorded the podcast, she was due any day with her second child. And by the time this airs, she will have given birth to her son. And so stay tuned at the end of the episode and I'll give you an update on what she named her baby, how much he weighed, all that fun stuff, and give a little life update because I'm so excited for her to add to her family. You're going to love getting to know Brooke and to see this other side of her. We may know her musically, but this is another beautiful side to her. And I just loved my conversation with her, and I know that you will too. Let's get to it. All right. I want to welcome Brooke White to the show. Hi, Brooke.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How are you? Oh, I'm so excited to be chatting with you today. We talked about 3 months ago when you were less pregnant than you are now. You were due literally any day, but for some reason it recorded in slow motion and you were kind enough to re-record with me. So thanks, Brooke. I'm happy to chat with you again. This is fun again. And I'm going to be moving up closer to your neck of the woods. So
That'll be fun. And also congratulations because neck of the woods is freaking amazing.
I'm excited.
We'll have to talk more about that later.
Yes, for sure. Well, for friends that may not know you, I think they will know you most likely from either Girls with Glasses, your YouTube channel, or from American Idol. So why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a background on who you are, where you come from, and your family?
Yeah. Geez, these kinds of intros are always tricky for me. I'm like, how can I just condense it all? So yeah, I'm Brooke. I'm the oldest of four kids, which I think is a personality trait to be an oldest.
Yes, I'm an oldest too.
And I'm originally from Mesa, Arizona. I was born and raised there. Most people think I still live in Arizona. I don't. I live in California. I moved to LA when I was 17 the first time to pursue music. Very suddenly, I didn't start singing till I was about 16 and then ended up moving here when I was 17 and moved back to Arizona after a short little stint here because I just, that's a long story. I also did a lot of hair. I cut hair out of my bathroom, worked at Nordstrom, was just trying to figure myself out and met my husband while I was there back at home. And he's from Nova Scotia, Dave Ray, CPA, which he's actually now a financial advisor since we last talked.
Ooh, exciting. That's great.
So now he's Dave Ray FA, but, not that that really matters, whatever.
But it does if you need a financial advisor.
Well, it does. Well, and we always called him Dave Ray CPA. It was just like part of his name. And now it's so funny because we're like, oh yeah. I mean, he's still CPA, but just not.
Yeah.
But not.
Right.
Not mainly. So anyway, yeah, we met and, we dated long distance for 8 months and then I moved back to LA when I was 20 and, we dated long distance again for 8 months and I started going to music school. I went to a contemporary music school in Hollywood called Musicians Institute for about 3 to 6 months. And while I was there, it became super evident to me that this is where I had to stay, that I was not going to go back to Arizona. And so I did. I stayed here in California and started just chopping down a path that I just never thought I would be chopping down.
Right. I mean, most people that pursue a music career have been doing it before they're 16 years old.
Oh, yeah. You go, like, you know, in American Idol, the classic story is like, I've been singing since I was two. And they show, like, some sort of great video home, you know, video footage of their kids singing on a stage. That was not me.
So interesting.
I was very shy. I know that seems really hard to believe. I had extreme stage fright and social anxiety, which I still have. But, Anyway, but I really was, it was not in my plan at all to be a singer at all. Like, I just want to say, like, I didn't have any ambition to do that as a kid. I played piano from the time I was 7 by ear and had music absolutely just coursing through my veins. But I didn't know that that was going to really take over in such a strong way. And so, yeah, when I was about 20, I made the big move. And I remember standing on the beach in Marina Del Rey and looking out at the water. And it was like, it was like a voice that was like, you're not going home. This is home now. And so, I've been here ever since. It's been about 13 years. And those 13 years have been really like I said, kind of outside of my wildest dreams and not in within my plan. We got married when I was 20, just a couple months before my 21st birthday. And, my husband, Dave, he's 7 years older than me. And, you know, I didn't, we definitely wanted to have a family fairly quickly. And by fairly quickly, I mean 8 years later.
Isn't it funny when it doesn't really occur to you?
Yeah. I mean, we never planned on it taking that long. It is kind of a complex story because, there's a lot of details to that. But, instead I ended up being a nanny and cutting hair out of my bathroom. And, we lived in like a pretty crazy part of town. And, you know, just kind of did the whole paying your dues in LA thing, which, was a very interesting experience. And then, I ended up, I was just like singing on the Sunset Strip and writing music. And I don't know, we were just trying to, you know, kind of navigate this place. And if LA doesn't break you, which it does many people, and you survive, then this is like an incredible place to be. And I think the only place to be, I shouldn't say the only, because people are doing incredible things all over the world. But like, as a creative person, I just felt like this is where I was supposed to be. Like, this was the place. Mm-hmm. So we made it happen and we stayed here. And then, and then I ended up on American Idol. And, really previous to going on American Idol, my thought was, all right, I'm 24 years old. This is getting out of hand. It is time to have a baby. I am getting so old. I need to move on with my life. I felt like I had given myself, you know, a good 3-4 years in the music industry to make it happen. Nothing happened. Obviously, nothing's going to happen. It's time to move forward with life. And then I ended up auditioning in Philadelphia.
Wow.
And that was a crazy story in and of itself. It was a very last-minute decision. Emptied out our savings. Went and stood in line for 21 hours. And got my first ticket, golden ticket, and then went through several other rounds. And, you know, the rest is history. I ended up on the show I checked into my hotel to where I lived on Super Bowl Sunday, and I came home from the tour almost 9 months later at the end of October. Wow. So, and I ended up at fifth place, which is like, I'm telling you, I could have never fathomed. And some people are always like, I'm so sorry you didn't win. And I'm like, are you kidding me? you know, only one person gets to win, right? So for me, like, to go that far, considering, especially my, which, you know, we won't really get that into, but I was, like I said, I had some pretty severe insecurities and vulnerabilities around singing, around sharing my talent. And, to go on American Idol really like exacerbated that to the degree. But it was an absolutely incredible experience for me because it forced me to really push through a lot of those painful vulnerabilities. And I did way better than I could have imagined. It almost killed me, but I survived. And I'm so grateful that I did it. Life-changing experience. So
amazing.
And then again, that just postponed childbearing even more, which was painful for both of us. But complicated, like I said. So then I got off the show. I went on tour, did some records. Love making records. Making records is probably my favorite thing to do as a creative person. But promoting them, going on tour, trying to get people to pay attention and buy them is like rips my soul out. So that part kind of sucks. And so anyway, I started the Girls with Glasses show with my friend Summer Blessa, which I'm still doing to this day. She was just a friend that I met on MySpace, and she had a dress company. And like literally we met on MySpace like over 10
years
ago.
That is so funny.
I know, it's so crazy. So we ended up, I just had a real strong feeling, you need to call Summer, so I did, and we went to IHOP, and we were both wearing our glasses that day, and she was moving to Arizona that night from California.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was like literally right in front of our faces, the Girls with Glasses show, and we started it, and we created the show between the two states, and she lived there for 5 years while we kept doing that, and I kept making music, and I made some made for TV movies, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, then she had a kid. And then finally I was in the middle of, I just started a band, which it's funny. Today marks 5 years ago that I released my first record with that band called Jack and White.
Wow.
And, wow. Jack and White was electric for me. It was like, I found my groove. Like musically, like I said, it was kind of heart wrenching. Like I loved doing it, but I felt like trying to sell records, trying to get people to pay attention. It's so expensive. It's so hard. And you're always gone. Like literally I was gone 90% of my life. I mean, wow. I was just not home. And you know, there's just lots of pressure that creates on your marriage, on your just personal life. And so I thought I don't know what's going to happen, but I actually was going to move to Nashville, start a country career, decided to stay home because I wanted to get closer to having a family, and decided to start this little band, this little side project, which ended up taking off and doing pretty well. The story kind of goes that, you know, about, I don't know, 6 months into the band, we were probably going to get a record deal. We were going to do a showcase. I ended up doing like 7 shows in a row and just killing my voice. Like absolutely just like I was at like 20%, like hardly could whisper, wow. You know, talk. And we had this big showcase, which that basically means like, that's when like labels and mm-hmm. the important people come out to watch you sing and play. So we got home from Sacramento from doing 7 shows in a row and my voice was gone. And we had a showcase the next day. So I'm used to this, you know, it's kind of like an athlete. Like you just, we, our voices get worn down and it's extremely stressful and nobody cares. It's your own problem right. to deal with. I told my band, I said, look, I'm going to call my doctor and get a steroid and it will help. You know, it's amazing. It's like Popeye. It's like, you know, you get a steroid and it just pops you right back up for a couple of days. It's really a band-aid and it's not the best thing. It's not healthy. It's not great, but it's what a lot of us have to do in order to keep singing. So I woke up the next day. I went to call my doctor because I've done this several times and I knew that he was going to have me take a pregnancy test because he always did because I'm, you know, a married woman, a young woman, and he just wanted me, you know, because the steroid is an aggressive drug, always made me take a pregnancy test.
Yeah.
So I didn't think two things about it. I took a pregnancy test and I was pregnant.
Wow.
And this was a completely just like giant, giant surprise at that point. Like, wow. I just was like, wow, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Because to be honest, like I was not trying.
Yeah.
Merely because, like I said, I was touring and I was having to like occasionally take these steroids and I was just in that mind space of like, oh, I'm just, you know, we were gonna get a record deal and it just kind of had taken, you know, just gotten crazy. So anyway, yeah, I'm pregnant. So I go, that meant I could not take a steroid that day. And it meant that I went and did a showcase with about 30% of a voice. Wow. And as you can imagine, I did not get a record deal. Life changed. The path changed. And there was an intervention that happened at that point that I'm very grateful for. I'm very grateful because it just felt like up until that point, it was like there was like some sort of emotional infertility that like,
yeah.
Or it was just, I just felt like I was stuck. You know, I had gotten started doing all this and I was committed to so many people and no one was encouraging me to get pregnant or have a baby.
Right.
No one. I mean, like, it was always like, oh, just, you know, right now's not a great time. I would try to talk about it with people and it would just, you know, anyway, it was just like the decision was just made for me. And what's interesting is now that we know our infertility problem, for all I know, I could have tried for 8 years and not even gotten pregnant. That's
right.
Kind of crazy.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. You didn't even know.
It is. So she's an absolute miracle to us. And for me, it's hard to not, after going through infertility, I'm always careful to talk about like, oh, you know, it was meant to, because, you know, you go through so much, and after talking to so many women, you know, it's like, you know, did God make it this way? Did he not, you know, is he making you infertile, or is he giving this person a baby and not giving this person a baby? It becomes, you know, such a sensitive
Absolutely.
Subject. And I'm careful to just, you know, make those claims. However, I'm going to just say that London was just an unexplained miracle at this point. Yeah, it took 8 years for us to have her. We just always thought we were going to have a family much, much faster and probably bigger. So I got pregnant with her and things changed. I'm going to be like so honest. Like, there was like one part of me that was just relieved, so excited, this is happening finally. And two, the other part was, oh, the other part of my life is over, and that part of me is going to die. And I did feel that death throughout my pregnancy, and it was extremely emotional and extremely hard. And I knew I was going to lose the band. I knew I was going to lose the music, which is funny now. I realize that it definitely changed shape and form, and it hit the back burner, but I'll never lose music. But at the time, I just felt like, wow, that part of me is going to extinct and die. And so it was, you know, I would cry. I would sit down to eat my breakfast and just, and just like sob. And I couldn't figure out. It was like, I was so happy. I was so sad. I just couldn't, you know, pregnancy is a trip. On your hormones and your emotions. And I know that now. But I did. I went through that. I went through that kind of mourning of, okay, well, you know, this other thing that I really loved, you know, this is something that I feel like women, a lot of women go through. It's just the different facets of who they are. You know, to be a mom, the truth is you're going to sacrifice a great deal of those other facets in order for you to do that. And it's a worthy, beautiful sacrifice, but nonetheless a sacrifice. And it is going to require you to kind of trespass through some very complicated feelings and some very heavy emotions. And I did that, and I went through it.
Well, and no matter how much your vision does or doesn't come to light, it's always going to look a little different than the way you imagined. And there is grieving process and an adjustment period when you're trying to come to terms with, well, this is the reality. This is the new normal. This is whatever that means for people, whether it's infertility or a different diagnosis or
just different.
And it's always going to be different. You can't cling too tightly to that, or else you're going to be very disappointed in life.
Amen.
But
and
it's still hard.
This is the giant trick of life.
Yeah.
Is, you know, we all have the ability to choose, and to some degree, I guess, depends on what country you live in. But, most of us, we do, we choose, we come up with an idea in our heads. We have passions, desires, talents, whatever conditions of our life that really help shape who we are and who we think we're going to be, like you said.
Yeah.
And while it's like, gotta try to dream and create that vision of what we want our life to be, I do think that's incredibly important to live that intentional life. But the truth is that might get yanked straight out of your arms. And what are you going to do when it happens? Because it will happen at some point.
Right.
And I feel like one of the biggest challenges of life is to accept that and to gracefully, or maybe even not gracefully, but just to find your way through those transitions and to, you know, sometimes we just trick ourselves into thinking that we have this control. And again, it's really an interesting dichotomy because, I mean, the only thing we have control over is ourselves, but the actual conditions of life and what happens around us and even to our own bodies and how they work, or don't work is really, really out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you just have to find ways. I mean, the only thing you have control over is just how you're going to respond to that and how you're going to deal with it. And I think the last several years has been a giant lesson in that for me.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this was obviously a surprise pregnancy, but once you came to terms with this new vision for your life, tell me about meeting London when London was born. I love this story so much. So
here's where the big game changer happens. Yes. Is, as I think we talked about last time, I remember, like, literally the week before she was born, going through one more upheaval, just one more emotional upheaval about the change. Because, you know, you're just getting so anxious, like you're about to meet this little person that's growing inside your body and doing all the preparations. And I had just finished a record because I toured and recorded the whole way through. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, how am I going to do this? Just really fretting in my head, like trying to just do the mental gymnastics of how I'm going to maintain who I am and be a mom, right?
Yeah.
And I remember writing a blog post about it called Heavy But We Float.
Yeah.
And writing all these feelings down and just really trying to sort through them. And I just remember being very stressed out, very worried. And I was also really worried about how was it going to affect other people's lives, the other people I had worked with. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
I just felt the responsibility of so many things. But I remember, you know, it comes down to the D-Day. It's the day that, you know, that she was born. And I was induced a week early because she was a sizely child. Her head was, I was being told her head was measuring at the 100th percentile. And I was like, shoot, all right, let's do it.
This is not good. Yeah.
And I had major anxiety about doctors and I've been known to pass out many times. Anytime people come near South regions, the doctor. So I was.
That's
scared.
A problem if you're giving
so
birth.
Yeah. Scared to do this, but so excited. And I remember going in to get my epidural and just like going in and thinking, well, I'm having an epidural. I will feel no pain. Wrong. I felt
right.
a lot of pain.
Yes. It hurts still for most people.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was physically very hard. But basically, you know, so I get induced and I'm kind of dragging along. The epidural is really only working on one side, which is, you know, if I was pushing a baby through my left toe, no big deal because it was numb to the world, but the right side was just completely had all the feeling and all the parts that mattered to where the baby came out of had feeling. So I was like, this isn't good. This is not what I was planning on.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there you go again. Finally, they were able to kind of figure it out and they broke my water. And I remember just shaking like an earthquake, like just my body just quivering. I just shook and shook and shook. And I could just feel it like she's coming. This is happening. This is happening. And I just got hit with just so many emotions, just the fear of giving birth. Oh, my goodness, I'm about to be a mom. This is all changing. This is all happening. And it was like, I was having a physical earthquake. I was having an emotional earthquake within me about the whole thing. And then the doctor told me, oh, it's time to push. You're ready. You're ready. You're ready. And I started pushing. And the doctor was asking me kind of like how Dave and I had met, which P.S. we met at a church dance. So I'm just going to put that out there. So I was telling her the story, our cheese ball story. And suddenly she says, oh my, she has hair. She has so much hair. And when she said that, I just started to cry because she just became so real to me so fast. And within 20 minutes, she was out.
Mm.
And when she came out, I remember, it's funny, I remember before she was born, I remember telling the doctor, asking her this stupid question. I was like, are you going to wipe her off before you put her on me? Because, like, I'd seen pictures of babies, and I was like, oh,
all gooey,
it's so
yeah.
stupid. But literally, she was like, yeah, yeah. But I remember it was, like, one fluid motion, and she came out, like, so fast, and then she just took her out of me and put her straight on my chest.
Wow.
And I didn't care. I did not care that she was covered in goop. I could have licked her like a lion. I could have, it was like at a National Geographic. I could have just been in the jungle licking her like a lion because I was so overwhelmed. And I know not every mom has this experience, but I had it. And I think what was so incredible about it was the opposite feelings that I was having before. Like I knew I wanted her more than anything, but having going through all this mental upheaval about the change, suddenly it was like I just received the most beautiful gift and the most beautiful confirmation that this is all going to be okay. And yeah. I had this very distinct thought the second they placed her on me is, I don't care about anything else.
Yeah.
I don't care. Now, obviously over time that feeling shifts and you start to care about other things again. But in that moment, the psychological shift that I had, like, I don't know if it's scientific, it's spiritual, it's physical, it's in your brain, but it was a very like, boom, I don't care. This is all that matters to me. This is the most important thing that could ever happen to me. And I just kept, I remember holding her up and just looking at her and like simultaneously crying, laughing. And just, I kept saying to her, I'm your mom. I'm your mom. I'm your mom. And it was like, I'm sure she was looking at me like, I know.
Got it, mom.
I know you are. And she did. So she did look at me like she knew I was. And it was so amazing. I always say, like, you know, she was born, but so was I. Like, she was born into the world. I was born as a mom. And it was like, it was so big and it was so incredible. And having that experience, I think, wow, just I felt an exhilarated feeling, but I felt such a peaceful feeling, like, oh, thank heavens. Like, I feel so good about this. Like, this is all going to be okay. I'm going to be like, this is more than okay. This is so incredible. I'm so glad this happened to me.
Yeah.
I'm so glad this finally happened to me. You know, I'm pushing 29 years old, having my first baby, and which, you know, in the scheme of things, is in my culture a late, seems a little late, but for me it was the perfect time to be born as a mom. And it was so meaningful to me because of what I had gone through before. And yeah, I don't know what else to say other than like, she just literally changed me on a psychological level. She changed me on a spiritual level, on a physical level,
I
for
love
sure.
That.
It was
amazing.
It was really remarkable.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. I mean, that's such a personal experience, but I know that there's moms out there that may not feel ready, or maybe they're adding a second child and they're like, oh
so
my gosh,
scared.
Like, do I disrupt this equilibrium? Like, that's a hard decision.
It is.
There's so many unknowns, but to realize that you can be scared out of your mind and doubting all you want, but it's going to be okay. In one way or another, it's going to be okay. Even if it looks different than you thought, it's going to be okay.
And I think, amen to that. But here's the other side of it is that was, okay, that's one beautiful, magical day.
Yes.
Okay, it's incredible.
Yes.
But then you do, you have the change and you have the baby and you have the experience. And the truth was, the days that followed got increasingly harder.
Right.
And the challenges came. Breastfeeding was like pretty much hell for 8 months, no matter.
Gosh.
You know, I worked like hell for it, and it never got easier, and it was always painful, and it was 8 hours a day, and then there was some other crazy life things that hit at the same time. And so, when it came due time to like, okay, now we're in the trenches, because I really believe that newborn phase is equal parts magic and misery.
Yes.
but you know what? The magic is so real, and it is so, and the love is very strong. Well, it was for me. Like I said, I don't want to lump it all, because I know that there's postpartum. I know that there are some other real challenges that come with childbearing, and I want to be sensitive to that. And think that, you know, but for me, I am so grateful that I had the magic, because it was, you know, that moment really was a confirmation to me, that everything was going to be okay. And it did help me through the challenges that came later. And like you said, you know, like maybe adding another child or doing something that, you know, is going to really dramatically change your life. Even when you have that really strong confirmation or something powerful that happens, that just helps you to know that this was just so right and so good for you, it does help carry you through, and is great to hold on to that and to keep that, because you need it.
You do.
You need it.
You do. And I think I had an interview the other day, and after the call, the woman was like, I feel like it was a really downer interview. And I'm like, you know what? It wasn't a really downer interview, but it was your story. And it just, moms need to realize that motherhood, the joy of motherhood, doesn't mean it's always light and easy and airy. Motherhood is so complex, and it's okay to share that side of it, because it doesn't take away our love for our kids, our devotion to our role, any of that. It can be everything, you know, every emotion, every, you know, descriptor, and it doesn't take away the importance of the role, the how good you're doing at that job.
No,
it's okay to be real.
It adds to it, actually.
Yes.
It adds to it, and it gives it more, because I think if we do a real strong disservice to ourselves and to our community and to ourselves as mothers, as women, if we only describe motherhood in its perfect lights.
Right.
I'm not saying
in its glowing form.
Because I do believe in dwelling in the positive. But what is the use of all of these hard experiences if we don't acknowledge them? And because those hard things give the light, the you know, the breakthroughs, the happy happy moments, meaning. To be happy has nothing to do with, like, it's not a 24-hour thing.
Yeah.
It is moments. You have to look at joy as, like, they are little moments that come and go. And, you know, you hope that overall those joyful moments, there's something that you can see more than just all the hard times. But you know what? For some women, that is the real thing. And it doesn't make you a bad mom, and it doesn't make you a negative person. Like, this is real.
Yep, and I think
this
it's so important.
And I feel like we have to support each other in all of our experiences. And so, bless her heart, you know.
Yeah.
I know sometimes when you express something that's hard on a public level, especially on social media, people look at it as you're not grateful, you're not acknowledging your blessings. And that doesn't have to be the truth. It makes me sad when we say that, you know, stigmatize each other with not being grateful when we express a challenge. Because I think that expressing a challenge helps people feel less alone. And I think that it's important to acknowledge both sides of your experience.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with that, Brooke. And so you went on to have your own challenge in recognizing you're dealing with infertility when you try and get pregnant with your second child. And like you said, you may have been dealing with infertility all along, and then London was a miracle. You don't really know.
But I don't.
Tell me, once you were ready to have a second child, tell me about that path to getting pregnant.
So the infertility journey begins. My daughter, you know, London hits one, and we're thinking, okay, well, it took 8 years to get our first child. We should probably start making up for some lost time and jump into baby number two. And we thought it would be good to have them about 2 years apart, and anticipated it could take a little time to get pregnant. But in my head, I was like, oh, now we're trying. You know, what's it going to take? 3 to 6 months or something. And so we start trying. And 6 months in, I do get pregnant. But it's a very weird... I take a pregnancy test. It's negative. I throw it in the trash. I happen to see it 30 minutes later, and there's a faint positive. And I'm like, wait, okay, strange. So I take one later, and again, it takes a while, but I get a faint positive. So it turns out I'm pregnant. I go to the doctor, take my blood test at about 7 weeks, and I miscarry. So that was a huge bummer. And potentially I've had other miscarriages, maybe, based off of that experience. But, so I miscarry, and the doctor tells me right away, don't worry, you're going to get pregnant again. Like, a miscarriage is a great sign that you can get pregnant. And, you know, I'm sure I'll see you here again in a couple months when you're pregnant. Well, let's just fast forward about 2 years, and every single month getting a negative pregnancy test. And literally, you know, I don't know what it is. You know, when you're trying to get pregnant, it's like you just can't wait to get your period. You don't. You literally the second that you could potentially test, you know, you take that test. And so for about 2 years, we did that, and I just wasn't getting pregnant. You know, you do as a woman, or for me, I started to really internalize it, like, what's wrong with, you know, something's wrong with me, and... You know, there was, I think, even some feelings of discouragement, like I was really letting us down, and I don't know, it was challenging. And then finally a friend said, you know, you should go to a doctor. You're technically, after a year of trying, if you don't get pregnant, you have secondary infertility. So I was like, oh, I don't know if we really need to do that. And she's like, no, you should go. You should go to the doctor. Because again, there's that whole part of like, well, London happened and it was just with the right time. So maybe I just need to have faith that it'll happen at the time it should happen. Finally, we did. We decided to go to the fertility doctor. And of course, what did he do right off the bat was slap me on Clomid. You know, I think that's just kind of the first, that's
standard,
the first,
right?
The first step. So they did. They put me on Clomid. I was extremely responsive to Clomid. I was creating, like, at my second cycle of it, I had created 7 follicles. And the doctor was actually like, you shouldn't probably try to get pregnant this month because you could have, like, quadruplets.
So unless that's your end game, like, well, yeah.
Maybe that's how this is going to go down. Maybe I'm going to have 4 babies at one time, and that's how this is supposed to be. And so I thought, oh, yeah, that's – but he's like, literally, if you do that, you have to sign a waiver because it's very dangerous. And so anyway, I ended up not getting pregnant with triplets. And for the several months that I was on Clomid, nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And we did everything that we were supposed to do. We did all the things, you know, rearranged trips, did all the things to make that happen. And it was not happening. And I'll just say, and I'm sure any other woman that's listening to this that has taken Clomid, Clomid is another one of those drugs that kind of messes with your brain. And it's a little heavy duty. And I wasn't feeling good. And after several months of trying, I just finally said, I need a break. I need a break from trying. And, you know, if you had a dollar for every time someone told you to stop trying, I mean, you'd be a millionaire as someone going through infertility. And it's a well-intended comment. It is. But it's also an impossible thing to do, to not try.
Yes.
Even when you're not trying. Not trying is still trying. P.S. Just say.
It still takes the same amount of effort.
It really does. And in the back of your mind, you're always maybe going to get pregnant. And that's the hope.
Yeah.
So, but we did. We stopped. I stopped going to the doctor. I stopped taking Clomid. I got into a workout routine. I just started saying, like, I'm going to go, you know, with London. Oh, I was on tour. I was doing stuff. Like, maybe I just got to, like, just really throw myself into life and just let it happen, you know. So we did that and did not get pregnant. So after a summer of just living, trying just to live in the moment to not try, quote unquote, finally it was like, you know what, I think it was September. Yeah, it was September a year ago. And my husband just said, I think we need to go back to the doctor. And I felt the same way, even though I didn't want to go back to the doctor, you know. And it was like, we were praying about it. We were fasting about it. We were trying to do all the things. We're just, you know, trying to just do all the things we could do to have the faith that it was going to work out. We go back to the doctor, and Dave, my husband, he says, you know, they never tested me. Maybe they need to test me. And naturally, my first thought was, I'm sure it's not you. You're such a healthy guy. Like, obviously, P.S., I didn't say this before, but when I got pregnant with London, I'd only had 3 periods that whole year.
Wow.
P.S.
The odds are not in your favor.
So I naturally thought, which, again, makes it kind of even miraculous, again, that happened. So I thought for sure, okay, you know, it's me. Although at this point, yeah, I was regular. And like I said, very, very responsive on the Clomid. So anyway, they go in, he takes the test. And they call him and they're like, we need you to come back and take another test because we think that it failed because it was so poor.
Poor Dave.
So he goes back, takes another test, same exact result. And I was in Utah at the time for a conference, and he called me and he said, it's me. This is, this whole thing is because of me. And I was stunned. I was like, are you, I don't know. I guess... As women, oftentimes we take infertility as our responsibility and our thing. But in this case, we discovered that it was actually something that was happening with my husband. And just the bottom line is they don't swim.
Yeah.
They don't. I mean, it was like 5% motility, which is almost non-existent. Like, they hardly move. So when we found this out, the doctor just said, you know, first off, you think, okay, this is a simple test the doctor could have recommended from the very get-go. It did right. not. Was that a doctor fail? Kind of, a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, even my own doctor just assumed it was my on my side of the thing, yeah. Which is interesting. But he just said, look, you already have a daughter, which, and he kept saying to me, is this the dad? And I was like, yes, this is the dad. He's definitely the dad. And he just said, you know, really, you know, anything could happen, you know, fertility is very mysterious, but if you had walked into my office, I would have told you, you would never be able to get pregnant on your own ever.
Wow.
With this condition. Like, you could have gone for years and years and years more of this and nothing probably would have happened. However, the miscarriage was consistent with the issue is that it doesn't implant because it can't get through anyway.
Yeah.
So it was consistent with that. So he just said, you could do this surgery and it could potentially correct it, but it'll take a long time for it to start reversing. And the chances of getting pregnant after that are like 20%.
Hmm.
And then he said the next part, which I just never anticipated, which was, but the other option is IVF. And I remember when he said it, I just was like, I don't know. I just never, ever thought that would be us. I never thought that would be the way we would do this.
Right.
And it was just like, I remember hearing it and being like, okay, all right, IVF. Like my first thought was we can't afford that. And
yeah.
then my second thought was like, what does this mean? Like, what is that? What do we even do? Like, I have friends that did IVF successfully. I had friends that did IVF unsuccessfully. I knew it was hard, but I just didn't really understand all the steps. Plus we had to do something else called ICSI, which is where they have to basically inject the egg with the sperm so that it can go directly to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in traditional ways, they just let them kind of find each other. Anyway, yeah, he just said, look, you know, I feel confident that if we did it this route, it would work. He's like, based off of how you responded to Clomid, you seem very fertile. I think we could do this. And I remember my husband just saying, well, how soon could we do this? He's like, we could start tomorrow if you want. Like, we could get her started.
Yeah.
And so I remember just sitting there like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
My body. Yeah.
Like, well, Dave was kind of like, let's do it. Boom, let's do it. And I was like, okay, look, I'm not saying that I don't want to do it, but I need to know what this is. I want to pray about it. I know we need to my husband was concerned about the finances. He was like, we need to look at our insurance. We want to do our due diligence. But he was like, we knew we were going to lose his job. Also, his job was coming to an end and we were going to lose our insurance. And so he said, well, we should probably do this while we have insurance. And, I just suddenly felt like this crazy, like, wow, things are just really, really moving fast. And,
yeah.
and I know that this is a big choice and I want to feel really ready and good about it. And so, we left that day and I was kind of tense. Like, wow, I just suddenly was just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was great. It was really, let me just say, it's a relief to know that we could do something about it. But the answer was a pretty extreme, like, answer. It was like, this is what you're going to have to do to get there.
Right.
But I guess the most extreme thing that could have been like, there's no way there's nothing you can do. And that would have been a terrible answer. That would have been I know many men and women get that answer. And look, there's probably nothing harder than that answer. So
yeah.
It wasn't the end of the world. It was just, I needed to catch up. I just needed to catch up emotionally and mentally to this. And so we went home, we looked at the insurance. We found out that it was going to cover up to 80%, which was incredible.
Yeah.
Well, kind of. You learn as you go that it's not that cut and dry. We still spend a lot of money out of pocket. But we went home and we talked and we talked and we talked and we prayed and we knew that the time was now. Like if we were going to do this, we were going to run out of insurance in like 3 months. And
no
we didn't
pressure.
Know what the future. Yeah, we didn't know what my husband's future job looked like. He didn't have a job yet. For the future, and it was like we got to figure this out. And time was ticking. We knew Dave's 40th birthday was coming. We knew that London was gonna be 4. It was like we just felt like this is it, like we gotta just do this. So after really doing some research, talking to some friends, you know, taking it to the Lord and all that jazz, I felt like, you know what, let's just do this. Let's go forward. And I literally, within a very short time, was starting my first round of treatment. It meant for me, I knew for me it was going to, it meant a lot of invasive stuff, which I, like I mentioned before, I have an incredible amount of anxiety around this particular type of doctor, around OBs, and mm-hmm. I had kidney problems as a kid, and they did very invasive tests on me, and because of this, I had a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, pass out, extreme anxiety. Like, I remember my first pap smear, she just showed me the instrument thing, and I literally passed out. I put her on, everything, and I passed out, and I could not do anything for 2 days. True story.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
It's amazing that I got through a pregnancy. Like, I did yeah. better than I could have imagined.
You, like, delivered a baby, right?
Right. So, but it was like, I was going to do this again. And
yeah.
it meant doing, you know, vaginal ultrasounds. I probably did 30 of them
yeah.
in the course of 2 months.
Yeah.
And tons of blood work and tons of needles and shots to my stomach. And, you know, you do several injections. I mean, I could get into, like, all of the things that you do, which it just escalates more and more as you go. But yeah, so after the first month, the plan was to do the egg retrieval and then to do a fresh transfer, like, 4 days later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hyperstimulated, which just means I responded very aggressively to the drugs. And when they took out the eggs, there was 26 of them, which is crazy.
There's got to be a world record for that, Brooke.
Right. Well, the doctor looked at me and he's like, you should be an egg donor.
That's how you're going to pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, he's like, we got a lot. It was a very aggressive reaction.
How are you feeling at this point? Like,
not good.
Yeah. I can't not imagine. Great. Yeah.
You know, like, every woman's different. I wasn't feeling good. I was feeling emotionally pretty low. I think was my biggest reaction was emotional and mental. I was having a lot of anxiety and depression. He said, look, we can't do a fresh transfer because of your hyperstimulation. We need to let it cool down for a month.
Wow.
And we'll freeze these and we'll do the transfer in November. So I was like, okay, that was kind of a disappointment. That pushed things back a month. And I was just worried, like, okay, what about our insurance? And what if this doesn't work? But so I went off, and then literally when I say I went chilled out, we went to Disneyland a couple days later, and I hit the ground in so much pain because I had a twisted ovary. This is also could be like a result of hyperstimulation. So I remember my husband wheeled me out of Disneyland in London's tiny umbrella stroller.
Oh my gosh.
I was literally... It kind of was at the same level as a kidney stone, but not as long. It didn't last as long, but it was pretty intense.
Poor thing.
Yeah, so I had that. It was just kind of like took a while for my I looked like I was 3 months pregnant. My stomach was super, my uterus was super inflamed. But, you know, that was all good. It was fine. It was just a recovery process. And after they put the sperm, you know, did the ICSI process, about 21 of them fertilized, which was still really high.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of embryos, which was awesome, but is also, I got to say, in some way stressful to me.
Yeah.
to have this many.
Yeah.
Anyway, we scheduled, they started me back on the hormones a month before just to ramp my body up to do the transfer. And so I started back on the hormones, and, you know, every time you go to the pharmacy, it wasn't covered by insurance. I drop 1,000, 1,200, 800 every single time, every 2 weeks.
Wow.
And, you know, you just watch your – luckily we had some money in savings, but we just watched it go down to, like, nothing. I mean, really, it was just like we just put everything into it. So
– yeah. And this is a common story. Yeah.
This is a common story. And I want to say, like, we're blessed that we could do that.
Right.
Like, I know that it's a blessing that we've had what we had to do it. But it was still like, wow. You know, I remember we were talking about redoing our kitchen because our kitchen is falling apart and crazy. And I have you know, I tried to make the most of it with chalkboard paint.
Yeah.
But we did a baby instead of a kitchen, and I think that was definitely the right choice. But anyway, it's just like, these are the things, like, you just realize, like, you really do. You put everything into it. And so the transfer date rolled around, and my doctor was really strong about only doing one embryo at a time. So we went in for our first transfer, and I was super nervous. And they put me on a – they gave me a – what is the anxiety medication?
Valium.
What's the one? A Valium, which is the first time I'd ever taken it. But I remember going in, and the lights were low, and they had this beautiful music playing, and the nurses all came in. They were so sweet to me, and – this is a big day. We're so happy for you. You made it to this point. Like you have to understand, like, there's just nothing traditional about this experience. Like,
right.
It's just so, but they try to make it nice. And the doctor comes in and he shows me a picture of my embryo. And I just cried. I just cried because I just thought, well, maybe this is it. Like, maybe this is like this little dot, like this little thing is going to maybe be my child. And when they went for it, it was just, I remember the guy coming in with the tube. It's this long, crazy tube. He's like, we've got your embryo. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a beautiful embryo. And my doctor's a very matter-of-fact man. He doesn't mince words, you know. But he was so sweet. And he just said, this looks like this is beautiful. Everything's going so perfectly. He put it in. And I felt the tears roll down my cheek. It was emotional. It felt really sweet. It felt really special for something so technical.
Yeah.
And we finished, and they just said, you know, sit here for 10 minutes. And me and Dave sat there. He held my hand. We just talked about it. We couldn't believe that we were here doing this. It was a lot. Even the short, what it had been a month, 2 months, felt long. You know, it's day after day of just treatments. And you know, it just felt hopeful. We did. We felt really hopeful. Like, we've done this. We put everything we have into this. We have faith in it. We felt like it was the right thing to do. And we walked out of there. And a week later, you take a blood test, and that's how they know. And it was the day before Thanksgiving. And I went in, and I took my blood test, and I felt good. I felt pretty good. And 3 hours later, I got a call from the nurse, and something about, like, just before she called, I was like, it didn't work. But you get that. That's what happens to you when you do a million negatives. And so I get the call from her, and she's like, I'm so sorry. It didn't work. Oh. And I was really sad.
Yeah. After all that effort, it's not just about
Honestly, after those 2 months, I felt like it wasn't even just 2 months, whatever. It was.
Yeah.
It two was and a half years.
Two and a half years.
But those 2 months was like, I'm giving everything I have.
Mm-hmm.
And after, you know, passing out and doing the shots and doing the things and the depression and the anxiety, I was like, 2 months. Just those 2 months were like really hard. And I thought, okay, it didn't work. And it was the day before Thanksgiving. And I did. I let it out. I did a good cry. And we went to the beach the next morning early, and I stood out on the sand, and I just felt like, you got to do it again, Brooke. You got to do this again. It's going to be okay. And just, you know, that there's millions of what the number of women that have done this. Lots of women do this. This is hard. You can do it. And you have London. Look at her. She's so beautiful. And I did. I felt strangely I was resolved. I'm doing it again.
Yeah.
I'm blessed. I'm not alone. So many women go through this. And so I did. And that literally 3 days after Thanksgiving, I went straight back to the office and I started the hormones again.
Wow.
And we pumped another couple $1,000s into, you know, I went to the pharmacy and dropped my credit card, and we started over. The good news is you have the embryos. So it's not like you have to go through the whole process. I don't want to, you know, you already have them frozen. So at this point, my doctor said to me, I got to be honest, I really thought you were going to be pregnant. It just seemed so perfect. But he said, but don't worry, we're going to get you pregnant.
Oh.
And I just thought to myself, okay.
And I was nervous. Like, I remember thinking to myself, like, mentally, emotionally, they cut me off of exercise already the 2 months before. And that was something that really helped me in the summertime kind of get back mentally, I felt like. And so I just was already starting to feel like, okay, I know this is nothing, 2 months. I probably have no right to feel like this is hard, but this is hard. So then the doctor called us, you know, he's like, let's schedule another date. And it was December 22nd. And I went in. It wasn't as lovely as the first transfer. The doctor turned on the lights. It was like the terrible, you know, lights.
Like neon spotlight,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like the neon light. It was just, you know, he did it. And he just said, okay, we talked. And he's like, you know, go easy this holiday. We'll see you in a week. And we'll hope for the best. And we left and we drove to Arizona. And I spent that whole Christmas trying not to think about it.
Easier said than done, yeah.
I was really actually just prepared. I don't know. And then we got home and it was a couple the day before. It was actually the 31st. No, it was the 30th, day before New Year's. And I got the call from the nurse and I was fully ready for a negative. I was like, right. Literally was like, I'm not pregnant. I'm not pregnant. And she called and she was like, right away, you're pregnant.
Oh,
you're pregnant. And I just kept... I was laughing. I just kept saying, no, are you sure? Are you positive? And she says, I'm positive. You are pregnant. Congratulations. This is real. She was like, She knew. It was so hard to believe. So anyway, I got a positive. And then a week later, I started going in for, you know, you go in for all these tests and then you keep testing, you keep doing all these tests just to make sure that everything is going well. And the week after that, the doctor said, well, do you want to know what it is? And I was yeah, that's right. We could find this out because of the genetics, the PGD. He couldn't find it. So he just sent me an email later in the day and in the subject heading, it just said it was a male. That's it. That's how I figured out what it was. There was no like balloon popping or special cake.
No,
it was
number one is a male. Yeah.
Number one, it was a male. And it was a male. Nothing in the body of the email, just a subject heading. So yeah, I found out it was a boy and it was just unreal. And, it was the best news in the world to receive that I was pregnant. But I'll tell you something that happened to me almost instantaneously was an insane increase in anxiety. I couldn't let myself enjoy it. I couldn't let myself be happy about it. I kept thinking something was going to happen.
Mm.
I felt undeserving. I had become kind of public about the IVF process. I felt guilty for conceiving. I felt terrible that all these women I knew were going through this and yet I had a child. It was like there was so much guilt and so much anxiety around having a successful pregnancy that I almost couldn't enjoy it. And I cried and I cried.
So hard.
It was really hard. I couldn't have anticipated after receiving such beautiful news,
right,
feeling so conflicted and anxious and sad about it. Like I just couldn't let myself believe that it was happening and that it was real. Like I just thought, like, how do I deserve this? I don't deserve this. And on days where I was having a hard time as a mom, I just thought, I don't deserve this.
So how did you come around?
Well, I'll tell you what. I ended up going into counseling because I literally just was so emotional. I need to just make a huge note about this. I was still on major levels of hormones.
Yeah.
Okay. I was still taking a buttload of progesterone. I was doing, I was still taking a couple hormones that were really, really strong. And I took them until I was almost 12 weeks. And I went through the counseling. And, which was a good opportunity to talk about a lot of things that maybe I was, you know, it just brought everything to a head. Anything I was depressed or anxious about all came forward.
Yeah.
And it was sometimes I felt like such an idiot, like sitting in counseling, like, what am I doing here? Like, I know I'm sad. I know I'm blubbering and I have nothing to be sad about. I'm so blessed. You almost feel more shame for having depression when you feel blessed. Like, it's almost worse.
Right, like, I shouldn't be feeling like this.
You don't deserve this. You don't deserve to feel like this. Mm-hmm. Hi, cutie. You've been really good. Thank you.
We have to make these.
We will make them after my call. We'll work on that. Mm-hmm. And so I remember just sitting there just feeling like, I think just even the shame of feeling sad when I had such a big blessing was even itself was like a huge problem. Like, I don't know. It was hard to process. I didn't feel like I could talk about it publicly. I didn't feel like I could whine about it or even talk about it.
Right.
I just thought, no one's going to understand this. Like, I have no right to feel this way. But, like, it really took a toll on me. Like, the emotional upheaval that I went through with IVF and the hormones was a lot.
Yeah.
And that's something that I don't think I was prepared for. I think it's important as women when we're going through these experiences to realize that there's certain elements of this that are not normal.
Yeah.
They're not under our control. Hormones are real and they play a very real role in our happiness, in our ability to perceive things as reality. And they can affect us spiritually and they can affect us on a lot of levels. And so I had to learn how to just not have shame for this experience and recognize that. Okay. Yeah. And recognize that this was just part of my journey.
Right.
And I'm so grateful that, you know, after the hormones, I did feel a shift. And at the end of the day, it was still worth it. I mean, it was at the end of the day, I was pregnant. I got what I wanted. We got what we were hoping for. But I'm just saying there was nothing easy about it.
Yeah.
And it was still my experience and it was still something that I had to go through and it was still a lot that I had to learn from it. And I still hold it sacred to me as one of my hard experiences. And it's not as hard as someone else's, but it was still mine. It was still hard. And it actually has brought to me a lot closer to, I mean, for me, the empathy and the heart that I feel for women that go through this and men, because both people go through it. The women, I feel like, really carry it super close to them, is enormous. And I think I felt that weight for months. I felt their weight. I felt their pain. I felt their sadness. I felt all these things. It's part of the reason why I actually haven't documented my pregnancy more this time around, because I worry about these women. I worry about them getting onto Instagram and seeing another happy pregnant woman. I worry about them. I constantly struggle inside about like wanting to share this part of my life that I'm very, very grateful and excited about. And yet knowing that this is a real journey and a battle, and it's a battle that people are facing and fighting and paying royally for and still not getting that thing. They're not, you know, it's, I don't even know how to describe that weight that I feel over that.
Yeah. That's heavy. That's a lot.
It's so heavy. And, you know, I have expressed it openly to a certain degree. And some people have even been really told me that like the choice I made was unethical and that I killed my babies and that I didn't make the right choice. You know, there's a lot of stuff that comes. But there's nothing like, you know, you just realize we can't judge. We just don't know what it's like until you're going through it. And you just don't know until you're going through it. So I knew this conversation was going to be really long. I just kept thinking, how can I truncate it? You might have to like put it into two or cut lots of it out, but
no, I think like, this is an important message. Yeah.
And like, I'm telling you, there's women that can tell you 50 billion times more intense stories than mine. Like ultimately when it came down to it, two transfers and it worked. That's great. And it was still like, there was a part of me that was like, I remember telling my husband, I don't know how many times I can go through this. I don't know how many times I can do this. I don't know how many times I can, how many cycles I can go through this. Like, should this even be happening? Maybe we may, you know, you question it. Question it the whole time. And, but here I am, I'm almost 6 months pregnant and, I'm scared. I'm thrilled. I have a certain amount of faith in this process because of what I went through with London.
But you're doing it.
I'm doing it.
You're doing it.
I'm doing it. And I feel like I really have learned. I really have expanded as a person. I'm still doing the work. I'm still trying to recover through certain aspects of it. But I feel, you know, I feel like, you know, it's okay to be happy about it.
Yeah.
And I think happiness is a vulnerable thing.
It is.
I think allowing ourselves to be happy and have joy for something is a vulnerability. And, because we always worry that what if, you know, something terrible happens as soon as you let yourself be happy, then the other shoe falls, you know?
Right.
But that's happened to all of us. It's true. We don't know what's going to happen in this life. There's no guarantees. And, you just got to live each day that is normal and that feels good. Like, let that be a gift to you.
Right.
Like, let it be happy. Let it be joyful. And even when the days are sad, let it be sad. And, let yourself be where you are. And the shame that we carry, like, it goes back to the breastfeeding and all those things that are hard. It's like, as someone who I think has shares a public life, which I'm an oversharer probably to a certain point. And I was always trying to find my boundaries because it is really hard to share. There's always a feeling of vulnerability attack that happens after you share these things.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I feel like I've been just trying really hard to do is, or I don't know if the word is trying, but just that the word gets thrown around probably too much, but just to be real about it, to be authentic and just know that it's possible to have, to be grateful and to be challenged at the same time and to feel the weight of the challenge and to still be grateful and to not have shame because things are hard and you feel that it's hard and you're experiencing it and you're expressing it and that, that it's possible to live in the space of gratitude while also living in a space of trial and to express it and not have to feel shame because you're having a hard time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's one thing to be happy and be so caught up in your own happiness that you neglect to have compassion for other people.
Right.
But you're entitled to be happy while also living in a space where you are looking around you and seeing who else needs a hand.
Who else needs
a smile? Who needs to be bolstered? You don't have to neglect your own happiness for the sake of someone else who's not there right at the same level as you. You know, that's short.
Amen, sister.
You're shortchanging yourself.
And I think it's a hard thing to do.
It's hard for people to do.
And sometimes we're hard on people because they're not good at it.
But yes.
It's okay. And, you know, when I was going to do my first initial announcement, I held off for a while because I felt like, how do I say this?
Yeah.
I feel like, again, after this, how do I tell my sisters of infertility that this is happening for me? Like, I just felt like that was hard news to share. Isn't that crazy? Like,
here's
my good news and it's hard news.
I
wrote this whole long thing and I read it to my husband and he got a tear in his eye and he rarely cries. He's like, that's too much. That's too much, Brooke. I know you want to be sensitive, but like, this is happy. We've worked hard for this.
You've earned this.
You're allowed to be happy about this. Like, you're sensitive. You care about other people. Like, simplify this. Like, he just ended up like asking. He's like, can you let yourself be happy? You know, and he's experienced it with me. He saw me go through all these emotions. Like, let yourself, it's okay. And so, to these sisters, I mean, I pray for them every night. I do. And I've learned about all the things that I would never say to them.
Yeah.
And I've learned about all the things that I still know that there's still no perfect thing I can say to them. I know there's nothing I can say except for to be there and try my best. I'm too loud. Too loud. but yeah, it's been a road. It has been, you know, and it could be longer, it could be shorter, but it was my road and it was a real road. And,
you're doing it.
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. And it's totally been. And I know that when he, like when London came out, I it could be different. It could be a C-section. It could be a totally different experience, whatever.
Yeah.
My prayer is just that, you know, like when he comes again, like I just, that feeling of like, where I don't know. Like I know that things work out as they do and you grow into it and you live through challenges and you get blessings and you feel, or you just, there's moments of just joy and it's like, oh, don't forget about those. Let yourself feel those. Those are gifts.
Yeah. And you can,
just as the other parts are gifts.
Yeah. And you can do things you never thought you were capable of doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, look at you. Yeah. Wow, Brooke, that is an amazing story. And from everything from your first experience with London to your challenge with infertility, it's just, it's going to be beautiful seeing how this continues to shape you as a mom. I love that. Well, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Okay. What would I tell my pre-motherhood self about motherhood or?
Yeah, whatever has been your takeaway since you've become a mom. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self to prep yourself knowing what you know now?
Oh my goodness. What would I tell my pre-motherhood self about motherhood? Everything will change, but so will you.
I like
that. And don't resist it. Allow it to happen. And know that despite the fact that it will at some junctures be so incredibly hard, you will not be able to imagine the joy on the other side. I feel like that's not even...
Yeah, no, that's, I don't even that's know. True.
Like, answering that question is just like, it's like you can just plan on everything changing.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to go according to your plan. Just go along with it anyway.
Yep. You know, it's going to be better and it's going to be harder. It's going to be both. Yeah.
It's going to be harder. And I think the other thing is also like what we were talking about earlier is that, and this is not even just a motherhood thing. This is a life thing is, you know, learn to hear the right voices. Don't, you know, one of them being your own, you need to learn how to tune into your own voice and not listen, not try to rely on everybody to tell you what you should do. I feel like you need to come to a place of peace. I mean, we all have fear that like we can't trust our own judgment or what if I'm wrong or, you know, sometimes you get to a place where we really like people telling us how to do things because then we don't have to have as much accountability if something goes wrong. But I feel like you have to learn how to trust your inner voice. And for me, a big part of that voice is God and really feeling secure in those things. And when there's another voice that means well, that's not the right voice to hear, that I really just tune it out.
Right.
And that can go from a friend or social media or an article or a doctor. And it's like, you've got to learn to listen to the right voice and hopefully know when you are hearing that right voice and follow it and have the courage to follow it without worrying about what other people think and what other people are going to do and have the courage to walk that path and listen to that voice.
Absolutely. I think it's Glennon Melton that said, there's an old wise woman within you and it's your mature self. And so all of that knowledge and all of those wise answers that you're just grappling with on a daily basis, it's in you. You just kind of have to just be still and just say, like, what do I know to be true for me? And it might be different than the person next to you. And that's the premise of this podcast. Extraordinary moms don't look the same.
No.
You can be extraordinary without being perfect. And because no one is perfect. And so think of what you've been through and what you've sacrificed for your body, your mind, your soul. And it's worth it for these kids. And that's extraordinary.
It is. It is. It is worth it, and it is extraordinary. And I appreciate the opportunity to reflect on it and what you're doing.
Yeah. So well, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your story.
Long one.
I loved it.
But I hope it made sense.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I know a lot of. So much of your story will resonate with listeners, regardless of whether it's the infertility or the new mom thing. We've all been there in some capacity. Yeah. So it's a beautiful story.
It's great.
And it's yours.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it is. It is mine and it's not someone else's. And I guess that like to other people, I would just stress that like we all have a story.
Yeah.
And the story doesn't have to be right or wrong. It's just your story. It's not someone else's. And, you know, we all have to just embrace our story and appreciate it for what it is, even if it's, you know, if it's not as hard or harder than something, like none of that matters.
Yep.
It's what your experience is. And then well, I guess it does matter in the sense that it helps us connect with each other. And
yeah.
That's what we hope that we do is that we can take down judgments about the story and just find connecting points. And appreciate each other through the stories that we have and encourage each other to share them and embrace them.
Yep. And give each other the grace that we also need to extend to ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank 100%. You so much, Brooke. You are a delight.
Thanks, Jessica. Thank you so much.
Have
I
an
appreciate
awesome
it.
Day and good luck with your little boy.
Thank you.
Boys
I
are
appreciate
awesome.
It. I'm excited. Yeah.
Yay.
I love my girl so hard, and I've just loved all the time I've gotten with her, and so it will be really exciting to see, you know?
Yep. A whole nother thing. I love it.
A whole nother thing. I'm excited.
Yes.
I love it.
You should be. You deserve to be happy.
Well, thank you so much. I think we all do.
We all do.
We all deserve it.
Yep, absolutely. You have a great day, Brooke. This was
you
so fun.
You too. Thank you, Jessica. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
I want to thank Brooke for being on the podcast today. There were so many words of wisdom. I just felt like I was taking so much in from each chapter of her motherhood journey, from waiting so long to have her first, to battling infertility, and now all the lessons that she's learned along the way. Wow, what an amazing journey it's been. And it's just so beautiful seeing somebody who wasn't so sure about motherhood to begin with really embrace their role and enjoy their children and just be present and really get it. You know those moms that really get it? I feel like Brooke is one of those moms. So thanks, Brooke, for sharing your story. I'm really happy to announce that she did have her baby. She was days away when we spoke back in August. And on September 3rd, she had her baby. Sunny was born. Isn't that the most darling name? Sunny Ray was born. He was 9 pounds, 9 ounces. And all the photos, she is just glowing. And London has adapted to her big sister role really well. And they're just all doing great. So we love you, Brooke, and we hope the very best for this transition. Like she said, she knows not every day is going to be easy, but she's going to live in the bliss and the magic while also realizing there's going to be some moments of misery as well. That's just the way it goes. But we wish you and your family the very best, Brooke. And Sunny is just darling. If you want to follow her on Instagram at Real Brooke White, you can see all the pictures there. And of course, I'll have that in the show notes at extraordinarymomspodcast.com. You can follow me at Jessica Dahlquist 3. And as always, if you ever want more information on the guests, head over to the website and look, dip back into the archives. If you're a new listener, see if there's any past episodes that resonate with you. You may find some that really speak to you and your mother heart. So thanks for tuning in today. I love having you with me every week, and I look forward to bringing you another episode next week with another extraordinary mom. Have a great day. Bye.